I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Conference Committee to order. Today is May 15th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Apologize, Mr. Chair. Apparently, Mr. Kopel is not on, so I will call the roll. Chair Hansen is here. Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman present.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Rood. Senator Rood. Senator Eichhorn. Senator Eichhorn. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Westrum. Senator Westrum. The quorum is not present.
Thank you, Mr. Strohmeyer. This meeting was noticed. We have 2 days after this before the end of the regular session of the Minnesota Legislature. We do not have a quorum today because none of the Senate members for the conference committee have made the choice to participate today. That will not stop us from doing our work. The House members are here, and we have some additional work to do. Trying to make sure that we are able to represent the people of Minnesota and getting the work done that they elected us to do. One of the agencies we had not been able to cover as much in depth in earlier meetings was the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And we have with us this morning Ms. Angie Becker-Kadelka to give us a little update on Bowser and the impacts of the budget on them. So Ms. Becker-Kadelka, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Chair and members, would you like me to start with some of our COVID-related, cost or shutdown-related, planning, or what would be the best place for me to start this morning?
Ms. Becker-Kadelka, maybe we've been talking about COVID impacts. Our last meeting we had the Science Museum and the zoo, and I think we had in the House we had done a letter seeing if we could get reimbursement. So why don't you go on COVID impacts for Bowser first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Board of Water and Soil Resources has calculated about $595,000 of COVID-related expenses through March 1 of 2021. The COVID-related expenses that we've incurred have been both the internal operational expenses and then the consequences of projects where, and this is where most of the expenses, where projects were not able to be done last session. So internally, some of the agency one-time cost to address COVID were things like safety protocols. We needed to quickly pivot, as did all agencies and all businesses for that matter. But we needed to get out to our employees before the stay-at-home order, the hand sanitizer, masks, and gloves shipped around the state. And before we understood the magnitude of it in March and April, we were shifting into rotating staff in and out. So we had to pay for extra cleaning and overtime. We stopped all carpooling, so all of our staff going out to meet with landowners, going out to meet with local governments, had to do single-person vehicle travel. And, these things that kept us safe but cost us more money in order to be able to switch there. We also then experienced COVID time increases, and so this is working with our grantees on extensions because they were no longer able, progression, they were no longer able to finish their work in the same timely fashion because they weren't able to go out and meet with landowners or start and continue projects. And then externally, the The delays in accomplishing field conservation practices, and these are the delays around survey, design, construction oversight. Last summer, we lost an entire field season. And so this year, you know, we still are moving forward with our grant making. We were still moving forward with the budget last year that's in place. But we need to figure out how we're going to make up for that delay, because we still need to do the work of this year of the state, of getting the grants out the door, getting those projects designed, working with those local governments and landowners. But now we have the whole backlog of last year that we need to start first. And so unless we have a way to catch up with this, if we need additionality, unless we have a way to catch up, what we'll do next is we'll start the cycle of always being about a year behind in our work from grant time to actually starting those projects. So, for example, we do a lot of easement work, our Reinvest in Minnesota RIM easement and our Minnesota CREP projects. Well, there's different timing in federal and state relationships. And so, for example, by delaying a year, we might miss some of our federal timelines of when things need to be recorded and done to hit the federal Farm Service Agency through the U.S. Department of Agriculture timeline. So a landowner's application is only good for 6 months and can only be updated for 6 months. So if we don't have that survey work done and the award granted, then that landowner has to start all over again with their application to the federal government. And so there's some of those kind of tensions, those push and pulls of things that we need to take account of now and try to figure out how we might be able to approach that without these resources. And then I think, you know, finally, there have been a couple of opportunity-related expenses that I think are the silver lining that we probably would not have been able to do but for COVID. So, for example, going to a stay-at-home order required us to then develop and implement an online signing process for easement documents. And so this is not just public data that can go back and forth through emails. This is private data that includes easement applications. And so we had to figure out a system of how are we going to get this around, which used to be all paper. That costs money, but in the end, you know, moving ahead, I think it's going to be good for the agency, because now we've got, we're moving into the 21st century. Now we've got this sort of thing in place as we move forward. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Becker-Kadelka, for being here today and talking about how things are impacting Bowser. I wanted to follow up on a couple of things that you mentioned. You mentioned about field conservation practices, how they were being slowed down. One of the things I was not able to pick up, are we in danger of losing any federal dollars or any state dollars because of the delays that have occurred because of COVID?
Ms. Becker-Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, that's a good question. What it depends on is really how the federal government will respond. And so technically, when we went into shutdown mode, we were no longer able to meet the terms of our agreement. So we have a certain amount of days to get something done. And then so we went into shutdown mode. So as a state, we are no longer able to do that. And so now it becomes the federal government's decision as to how they want to proceed with our current federal contracts. And so what we've been in contact with them to say is, give us some time. We want to catch up and get all this work done so that we can just keep the contract going.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Becker-Kadelka. That's helpful to know. And one of the things that you're mentioning is there's catch-up work that you need to do to because we've lost one whole growing season. What do you need from the state? What are things that you've got in your budget to help address the catch-up? In other words, what are the resources and tools that you need from us to make sure that we can get caught up from what happened in the past year?
Ms. Becker-Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, that's a really good question. The biggest thing is our time, our engineering tech time and engineering time to go out into the field to do that pre-survey work. It's that labor intensive where, you know, even with all this technology, you still need to go out and map out and design what conservation practices look like. And so we aren't hiring more staff. And so the staff that we have now are engineering techs and our engineers, still total, only 10 in total for the whole state, have all of the work of last year to do, in addition to all of the work of this year to do, where they weren't able to get out into the field. So it's really around resources to get contractors to help us out. And we know that contractors cost and bill at a different level than maybe state employees do. It's then going through and having someone who is proficient in GIS and AutoCAD to design these projects and surveys. It's making sure there's enough contractors around the state to start to construct these and people to go and look and provide oversight at each step along the way to make sure this happens. And so all of this can be done with a short-term catch-up, right? So we can do a short-term catch-up, but having those resources are going to require this temporary additionality that we just won't be able to do without extra funds.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Director Becker-Delka. Thanks for being with us. In thinking about the great work that Bowser's been doing, you know, we've had a lot of conversation in this committee about the collapse of our pollinator population and trying to be creative and thinking about ways to support them and to bring them back. And the Lawns to Legumes program is one that Bowser's been initiating and has had some great success in helping to effectuate that. I'm just wondering if you could speak to just a little bit about the success of the program and also what will happen to Lawns to Legumes if we have a shutdown.
Ms. Becker,
what might be the implications of that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Morrison, thank you for that question. You know, the Lawns to Legumes program has been something that we are so thrilled to be working in partnership with Minnesotans, with the legislature, to really say, here are some individual things that we can do on even small patches of yards to start to establish corridors. And the results of this and the feedback that we've gotten back from Minnesotans across the state has been tremendous. So we received in our first year alone over 7,500 individual applications to participate in the program. And the program was funded through ENRTF, the Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund dollars. We had enough money to pay for about a tenth of that. And so knowing that this demand is out there, number one, is really exciting to see interest. If the shutdown happens, that program is going to then just be halted like all other programs for the state. We won't be able to offer some of those cost-sharing grants to landowners, to do those follow-up trainings. So we provide trainings to landowners on best practices, how to design and develop and implement these small patches and corridors of pollinator habitat. And then the challenge is that it also then slows down this long-term work that establishes a continue evolving and presence of getting a better habitat in place. So it kind of slows down where we have to then start to build momentum again to get folks interested again before we're able to continue the good work of the state.
Representative Morrison, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Director, for that information. I like how you've said working in partnership with Minnesotans and the tremendous demand that's sort of untapped out there. That this feels like another theme in our conversations in this committee. We have these big urgent problems that can't afford to be paused. We have to continue momentum and working to protect our pollinators is one on that list. So thank you for your great work on that program, and I sure hope that we get a budget done.
And Director Becker-Kadelka, this morning, my wife had Mother Earth News and opened it up, and there was a large story on lawns to legumes in that nationwide publication. And congratulations to Mr. Shaw for the work he's been doing here and the recognition. I know our peers in other states are asking about this of us all the time, and it would be a shame if this wonderful work was halted because of an inability to adopt a budget. Director Becker-Kadelka.
Oh, Mr. Chair, thank you for those kind words. We have just some of the best expertise in the state, and that's really what we want out of state employees, right? You want to find the best folks. The work that has been done, and this is in cooperation with local partners and nonprofits, all of this happens because of these partnerships. We have been honored to be able to take this initiative that started at the legislature and implemented, and we have recently been awarded Northern Lights Award for our public outreach campaign, because part of it was using college students to design design messages and themes and fact sheets that helped them in their work, in their schoolwork, but also was a way for us to showcase some of the things that Lawns to Legumes provides. We have been able to be featured in O Magazine, Oprah's Magazine, and Mother Earth News. We've gotten requests nationally for interviews. And this all started because of a very small award, an idea at the legislature. And so I guess one of the things I'd like to share today is that the work that's being done here really does matter. And the takeoff from that, you know, germ of an idea and that bill that was introduced in the House, Representative Morrison and Representative Hansen, has bared a lot of fruit.
And Director Becker-Kadelka, you know, those hardworking state employees that could get caught in this disagreement over the budget, what happens to them? You know, they're working hard for the people of Minnesota, and is there like a notification that has to go out if we're unable to reach a budget, if a budget is held up? With demands, what happens to those hardworking state employees?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and members, you know, shutdown planning has to begin well before July 1st, because we have interactions and partnerships and obligations to landowners, to local soil and water districts, to watershed districts, to counties. But we also have approximately 119 Minnesotans that are employees. And so, MMB can provide more detailed information, but the state is required to notify employees of a layoff 30 days before the layoff happens when practicable, but at least 21 days in advance. So at least 21 days, and so that really means we're getting to work at the first week of June. And then we need to start working with landlords. We need to establish plans to gather in all state inventory, because if the state is in shutdown on July 1, and you're no longer an employee, you can no longer have possession of any state resources. So it's gathering up of computers and keys, ID badges, even the little things, because all of those sorts of inventory needs to be taken. And I think it'll be new this time. I remember back in 2011, this process, everybody was already in the office, and it was a lot of extra planning that had to happen. Now we've got everybody teleworking, and so bringing all of that back in is something that all state agencies will be going through. In order to get this done, you know, we really need to start, if there's going to be a shutdown, we really need to start the process in early June that requires us to switch away from providing the services that we normally do to meet our mission of improving and protecting Minnesota's resources, to then working with vendors and partners, because after July 1, we have no authority to meet any of our obligations. And so, Mr. Chair and members, if you'd like, I'd be glad to also share some of the shutdown impacts on our partners.
Representative Fisher has a question, and then I think maybe that. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of my questions starts getting to some of that area for Director Becker-Kadelka. And where I'd like to start is, first of all, in the Minnesota River. I know that there are appropriations to address dredging because of the amount of soil that's now coming down on the Minnesota River that has increased greatly. And what happens if we have the shutdown? How does that impact the ability to dredge? And then for barge traffic to be able to service the businesses that are up and down the Mississippi River there, how does that shutdown impact those operations?
Director Becker-Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, you know, it's really all around the timing of these. And so if the grant is one that is a reimbursable grant, which is what most state grants are, on July 1, all work on that grant has to stop, has to cease. And so what that would mean for the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, they have resources to find dredge spoil sites. So once you pull that material out of the river, where does it go? And how do we make sure that it's used in a way that, one, doesn't cause erosion, doesn't get back into the river, but two, you know, if there is nutrients or something in there, is there any benefit to where we find, we call them spoil sites? And so that's really their job, is to find these spoil sites. And so as of July 1, that would have to stop, because there would be no way to have that current grant going out the door, or the oversight, or being able to implement it.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Director Becker-Kadelka. So that sounds like if you're not able to have spoil sites, it makes it very difficult to get the dredging done. And it sounds like something that occurs throughout the season. So that sounds like at some point it could impact the ability for the barges to get up to address the businesses that are in the area. One of the things that kind of goes with this is that we know that the water is running off too quickly off the land from in the Minnesota River Valley there. Some things that we've got proposed are water storage, to address the water storage issues. Can you talk a little bit about how that can help address the problem, and what happens if we're not able to get these things passed through, how that impacts down here where we've got commercial and commerce going on, how that impacts the whole system?
Director Becker-Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, so water storage is a term that I think has been around for a long time, but it's evolving in how we implement and how we think about water storage activities. For example, on the landscape, farmers right now are doing all of these they're small projects right on their farm. They might have a water and sediment control basin, it's called a WASCOB, that just holds back a little bit of water in a part of the farm field where they've got a big slope going down the hill. That expands to the need for larger areas for temporary storage, because we know that our rainfalls are increasing. We know that farmers continue to drain because they have to, and there's productivity that they want to maintain on the landscape. But that extra water in the system provides more capacity, which means more erosion and more sedimentation and more pollutants in our waters. So water storage practices can happen all throughout the watershed, but it makes most sense to catch the water and slow it down as early as we can. So, for example, one practice might be, and this is in the governor's budget recommendations for water storage, is to do something that is called flowage easements. So we would work with a landowner to let's say when the river is high and the landowner's land is here, that river would divert and go over the farmer's land, and that slows everything down. It widens the river out. It slows down the water. And then it might be on the land for 24 hours as the water comes back down. And then once it's done, that land is dry again and can be used. Well, the farmer is taking a risk to help the state do that. So there's a public benefit, but there's a risk to the farmer. And so the practice that we would enter into is to make sure that if that does happen, that the farmer's risk by helping out the state of Minnesota is compensated. And so, you know, those would be the types of agreements, like a flow easement, that we could do with the governor's budget recommendations this year.
Representative Wathlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of switching topics a little bit here, Ms. Becker-Kandalka, but I'm wondering if you can talk about our soil and water conservation districts and the work that Bowser does with them, and how, you know, if we weren't able to pass a budget, how that would impact those SWCDs.
Director Becker-Kandalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wasilik. Yeah, that's a good question. So there are 90 SWCDs, soil and water districts. There's 46 watershed districts and water management organizations. There's 90 counties that are active, and some are split and some aren't split, that we work with in our program. So we have well over 1,000 active grants and contracts. If there is a shutdown, if there's a potential shutdown, we need to begin to advise the contractors and vendors that all work underneath these contracts that the activities must be suspended. We need to work with the grantees themselves, so all of these local governments. And the way that it worked in 2011 when we shut down was that the work that was paid in advance got to continue, but then all of the work that are reimbursable grants, which is really the way most of it works under the state, is that any grants that are paid in whole or in part under a state reimbursement must be suspended. And so before we would start reaching out, we'd need to start a little bit earlier, start working with the Office of Grants Management to understand what the current processes are and how that maybe has changed or is the same from 10 years ago. And then another piece that our local governments work on are easement projects. So if we think about whether it's through the RIM, the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program, or through wetland banking sites that are underway or scheduled to begin, any project that requires a certification for program practice payment. So we send our technicians out there to take a look throughout the construction process and make sure that things are being done to a specification or a standard that results in them being able to meet the terms of getting a practice payment, all of that work has to be suspended. We also wouldn't be able to pay vendors for work done that is completed before July 1, because our fiscal departments under shutdown as well. And so if an invoice comes in, I think that's another area where a vendor could be impacted. And then I guess the last piece would be we would need to then work with all of our federal contracts that we have and say that we're no longer able to meet the terms of our federal contracts, whether it's us or our local government partners that we're working with during a shutdown, because any sort of work, let's say like a tillage survey, you have to go out and see what that looks like and what those crops look like. We would need to miss windows potentially in order to do that work. So I think we'd also then finally need to notify all of our federal contract partners.
Representative Wasilik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess the summary of what I just heard was it impacts a lot of people. It's not just the state employees that work in state agencies, but it would be all of these vendors and all these other folks that you guys partner with in this work. So just wanted to better understand that so we know what that looks like. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Becker-Kandalka, for the work you do. I'm hoping that we don't have to be dealing with the shutdown things, and we can be doing more of the awesome programs that you have and that Minnesotans are participating in, whether it's in the city, the suburb, or in the country. I think you have a high degree of credibility with Minnesotans, and that's evidenced by their participation in these programs. And we have put forth a budget that I think is builds upon the foundation that you have laid. And so we're hopeful to keep building and keep working and keep preparing these efforts that can help out Minnesota's pollinators and the public as well. So thank you for your work, and hopefully things will turn out good. Members, we have a couple letters in response to the questions we asked. There's a, and I think the Minnesota Zoo letter has been posted. And I should note for the record that Senator Ingebrigtsen did send me a letter stating that he would not be participating today. Mr. Strohmeyer, the Minnesota Zoo letter, do we have someone here from the zoo, or does Mr. Hagemeyer want to walk through those two letters?
Mr. Chair, we don't have anyone from the zoo here. It's just a letter, and it's just mostly follow-up information on the federal funds. Mr. Hagemeyer can explain a little bit more detail, but it's nothing. Okay. It's just follow-up.
It's a very good letter with great detail to the governor based on the conversation we had two meetings ago, and that's why we have these open meetings, so that we can ask questions to help fill out the information we need, whether it's for COVID or for preparing the budget. Mr. Hagemeyer, do you have insight that you can share with us?
I think most of it's explanatory by letter, but I can bring you through a few of the numbers and compare it to what we have in the budget, Mr. Chair, if you'd like.
That would be helpful, please.
So this would be the document that's under the calendar for today that says Minnesota Zoo information. It's the second to bottom link under the posting for this committee hearing. If you go to that letter, it's a letter from Director Frawley to the governor's office about the lost revenues this year. If you go to the second page of that, it details some of the revenues. I won't go in great detail with this, but you can see for FY20 actual numbers, which would have ended June 30th of 2020, the revenues are down $5.45 million, and you can see the various categories: admissions, membership, parking, food commissions, things like that. And then you can see FY21 through April of this year, they were down another $6.701 million for a total revenue loss for FY20 and 21 through April of this year of $12,152,000, and they're projecting another $2.341 million through the end of the biennium, through the end of June 30th of this year. 2021 would be the end of the biennium, for a total loss for 2021 biennium, which we're currently in, just finishing up with 2 months ago, of 14.493. And then you'll see the asterisk behind that for the projected additional revenue losses for 22 and 23, but they didn't specify the numbers here. And in comparison, the amounts included in the governor's budget and in the House proposal was $1.595 million in FY21. So they aren't necessarily lined up on the years exactly because of how the appropriations work. We're not doing them retroactively. But for the current year, there'd be $1.595 million. And then for next biennium, 22 and 23, there's $9.9 million. So a total of $11.495 million. In additional resources in the House and the governor's proposal. And this is on, for comparison, this is in roughly, they have a roughly $25 million per year operating budget from all funds, general, their own revenue and various sources. So you can see the scale of it there. And that's about all I have on that for the Minnesota Zoo, Mr. Chair.
So Mr. Hagemeyer, with the even if we received everything at the budget from either the governor or the House, we're still short, right?
Mr. Chair, compared to these numbers, yes. I would note that there was some COVID-19 Minnesota money that went into the Minnesota Zoo, and I don't necessarily see it on this chart here, so I don't know how that would play into there. And as I mentioned, there's projected additional losses in 22 and 23 that they didn't specify here, so how those net out, I'm not exactly sure, but it's could be more than we have in the bill, yes.
The federal ARP money would be very helpful at this point. You don't have to comment on that. That's just an observation. On to the Science Museum, maybe describing their response.
Yep, Mr. Chair, the Science Museum provided some more detail on their operating losses and their budget a little bit. I don't think this one is posted. I don't know that it's in a good format to post publicly, but I can share some of the information included in there. And just for scale, prior to COVID-19, they had an operating budget. I think it shows about $41 million in similar revenue numbers, per year. And then starting for, and they mentioned some of these numbers the other day, but they've now provided them in paper. They're for FY 2020, which would have ended June 30th of 2020, they had gate revenues that were down $4.8 million. And then for FY 21, which would be July 1st of last year till June 30th of this year, their gate membership is down 5.1 million. Their overall, their memberships are down 1.7 million and their programmatic support is down 1.6. And then they provided numbers for FY 22 as well. In total, they're projecting either have actual losses or projected losses of 18.8 million over FY 20 through 22. And then they have received federal support of in two pieces of 5.2 million and then 2 million. So that'd be about $11.6 million variation between the revenues and the federal support that they have received to offset those.
Members, are there any questions on the numbers that Mr. Hagemeyer presented? So again, even if we had our full state budget, we're quite short of what it would need to make them whole. Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, yep, the House has an additional $1.939 million, I believe, in funding, which is significantly less than they're showing as lost revenue here.
And the Senate has no additional money?
Mr. Chair, the Senate has the base funding of $1,079,000 per year.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just actually have a question for you. I know we sent those letters to the Walz administration, but I'm wondering if you as the chair of the House committee have heard anything about potential uses for this money, if this might be something that could be used for, or if you have a sense of when those decisions might be made. I think, you know, where sort of the zoo and the science museum are sort of hanging out waiting for some news. And I'm wondering if you have any sense, if you've heard anything or have any sense of that, or if we're just all waiting for the same news.
We have received an acknowledgement of the receipt of the letters that we sent in March. We sent yesterday from the House to Senator Ingebrigtsen a draft letter on the Science Museum. We have not received a response on that. The zoo letter, I think, goes directly to the governor and references the House and the Senate, and I think it does a great job of detailing it. And, you know, for the record, I think from the House, speaking from this conference committee, we strongly support federal aid. But I know they've received things. We have not received any indication on where those, if there would be federal appropriations made. I would hope so. And maybe we could all nod our heads here, conference committee members. Representative Wasilek.
That was the question that I had. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. We also received a letter from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency from relating to a feedlot provision in this bill and in the ag bill. And I think Commissioner Bishop or Ms. Gauthier are on. If they maybe could address that, Commissioner Bishop or Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Commissioner Bishop is on. I'm not 100%. Oh, there you are.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Laura Bishop from Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I will try to turn on my camera. Here I am. I'm sitting outside, so I might get some sunshine on my face, which would be nice. But one thing that we did submit is about the feedlot provision, and with regard to the manure spreading, we believe there's some misunderstanding. We also have a letter from the EPA that talks about the conflicts that we would see with the state and federal laws. And I think Greta and Katrina Kessler, who's on, can talk a little bit in more detail because she's had some of the conversations both with the author and Senator Westrom, as well as Senator Weber, who was the author in the Senate, and with the EPA as well. So Greta, do you or Katrina want to go into detail on some of those conversations and kind of what the letter entails?
Ms. Gauthier, Ms. Kessler. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe Ms. Kessler is in the room too, and I can start, and I think she can answer any detailed questions that members have.
State your name for the record, just.
Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to your conference committee today. So the letter, first letter we submitted is a clarification on our new feedlot permit. We renew it every 5 years. We are delegated by the US EPA to do this federally required permit, as are all states to do federally to permit feedlots. So when we updated this permit this year, as required by the Clean Water Act, we took into account new data and new information and showing that there is nitrate contamination of groundwater. And under our delegated authority, we are, as you know, we are to work to reduce contamination of air, water, and land. And so we use the most newest and most up-to-date data from the University of Minnesota and from the Discovery Farms here and in Wisconsin. And we put conditions in our new permit pertaining to manure application in March and in October. We requested from EPA technical assistance with the question of whether or not the language that's contained in both this conference committee and in the Agriculture Conference Committee would conflict in any way or create problems or discord in terms of EPA's requirements and the Federal Clean Water Act. And EPA sent us a letter back that we also sent to the chairs yesterday. And we certainly can send it again if it was not, there was not time to post it. But it points out two specific aspects of the feedlot language that the EPA has stated may warrant disapproval. One is that the language may circumvent the required federal permitting process with public notice and public hearing and opportunities to challenge and request legal review. And the second concern EPA expresses is that it removes EPA's opportunity to review and object to NPDES permits. These are the permits that are the water discharge permits that we issue under our authority from EPA on large feedlots. EPA's letter states that they may disapprove or approve if this language is passed into law. They would then review it and either disapprove, and that they could disapprove on either one of the two bases I just mentioned, and also from the standing that they could find that this language improperly limits the PCA's ability to enact permit requirements that are necessary to prevent nutrient pollution to water. So that letter came yesterday, and it did also state that even if the Minnesota legislature were to pass this language and void parts of the permit that was just issued in February, facilities in Minnesota would still be subject to federal enforcement and citizen lawsuits stemming from those provisions, because the permit would not be modified for purposes of the Federal Clean Water Act. So if EPA were to review this and disapprove the language that if it were passed, then that would present uncertainty for producers who would be subject to state and federal laws that conflicted. So there could be legal costs for the agency in that scenario if producers are found to be in violation of the Clean Water Act by complying with these state standards that would have been changed under this language that's now before you if it were passed. So that's essentially the letter. We remain opposed to this language, respectfully ask that it not be included in your final conference committee report, and we're happy to answer questions.
Ms. Gauthier, just so I understand, or we understand, that So if the legislature passed this into law as part of an omnibus bill acceding to the Senate and it became law, then the federal government requirements remain the same. So if there was litigation, if there was a lawsuit, then the state would be responsible because we've passed a law that is in conflict with the federal law that say neighbors could sue the state over not enforcing. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is essentially what we took. That is how we are interpreting the letter they sent us, and that is what they essentially have conveyed, is that if there are, if they were to rule that language that was passed into law under the scenario explained, if the EPA was to disapprove those changes, then the state of Minnesota would be responsible for space between state and federal statute.
Members, are there any questions? Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Gauthier, Commissioner Bishop. Members, this is the last scheduled House gaveled conference committee of the regular session. There are no conference committees scheduled for tomorrow. The Senate could hold a conference committee at 1 o'clock on Monday, the last day of the regular session. For a year, the 2020 Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund bill has been held up, along with everything else. And so with the exception of the dry cleaners bill, and again, I would give credit to Senator Ingebrigtsen for his leadership on passing that unanimous bill and getting that signed into law earlier this session. However, we're here and we have the authority and the opportunity to do what we said we would do. And that is that we need to get these LCCMR proposals passed. And so with that, Representative Wislawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to talk about the 2020 LCCMR bill. So if members could take a look at the Senate Article 3, House Article 2 side by side, that's what I'm going to be referring to here. I would move to adopt the following language. Adopt House Article 2, incorporating the following amendment on page R30, line 75.26. Delete 1,095,000 and insert 345,000. On page R36, line 82.22, delete A and insert receiving funding to conduct. R36, line 82.23, delete service provider and insert services. R36, line 82.24, delete 5 and insert 7. R36, line 82.27, after checks, insert, for background check crimes as defined in Minnesota statutes, section 299C.61, subdivision 2. And then I would also move to adopt the Senate language from Article 3, page R27, lines 192.1 to 192.20. And I would instruct staff to make necessary technical changes and adjust the subdivision totals.
Wislawick moves. Is there any discussion to the motion? Is there any discussion? Representative Wislawick, did you request a roll call?
I have not, but I will request a roll call now.
Roll call being requested.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
You know, this is my first time on a conference committee, and I just want to better understand process. So without a quorum, what exactly are we doing? Could you just help us understand that this is our first time here?
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. We do not have a quorum, but we are going to attempt to pass the provision. We will see where the support is and where it is not. And recognizing there's not a quorum, we feel it's important that we have made an effort to pass the 2020 LCCMR bill. And Representative Woslawick, I think you could correct me, but this is pretty much the offer that we had provided where we increased the wastewater pond items in the provision for the Senate.
Yes, that's correct.
Representative Woslawick. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to be clear then, in order for us to conduct any official activities, the Senate would need to be here and we would need to have a quorum.
Representative Heintzman, we will take the roll and that will determine the quorum as well, because a quorum can be determined after the beginning of the meeting. It appears that the senators are not here, but we'll go forward with a vote anyway and call the roll.
Mr. Chair, just more clarification. That's okay. Could I ask another question?
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're smiling there, but I think that's your static picture there. So I.
Yes, it is. And I am smiling because I am new and just trying to fully understand. So clearly, in order to do what we need to do or what are attempting to do officially, we would, in any other circumstance, have to have the Senate here for this conference committee to actually move this as attempted. Is that true or not? I'm just trying to understand.
Representative Heintzman, we can move things, but we would need three affirmative votes on each side to pass something. So we can make a motion, but passing it would require three votes on each side. And the absence of a quorum would, the way it is now, probably we'll test with the vote, would probably indicate that there are not three votes on the other side. But that's what we would move here with the vote.
All right. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to confirm, and I think that you actually said it a few seconds ago, that this is a more of a symbolic thing to see where support is and isn't. And so that's what we're up to today. All right. Appreciate the clarification.
As you know, Representative Heintzman, anybody can move motions, but they don't always pass. Mr. Strohmeyer, am I correct in that, or Mr. Hagemeyer?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Ms. Taylor. Maybe Mr. Strohmeyer was ready to take the roll.
Yes,
there.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Mr. Strohmeyer, please take the roll.
Thank you. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Woslawick?
Aye.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Representative Morrison?
Morrison, aye.
Representative Heintzman?
Heintzman, no.
Senator Ingebrigtsen? Senator Ingebrigtsen? Senator Rood? Senator Rood? Senator Eichhorn? Senator Eichhorn. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Westrum. Senator Westrum. There being four votes on the House side, one vote no, the motion does not prevail.
The motion fails for lack of three votes on the Senate side and the lack of a quorum. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would direct members to Senate Article 4 and House Article 3 in the side-by-side. And I'd like to move to adopt House Article 3, incorporating the following amendment. R37, line 128.10, delete A and insert receiving funding to conduct. Page R37, line 128.11, delete service provider and insert services. Page R37, line 128.12, delete 5 and insert 7. page R37, line 128.15, after checks, insert for background check crimes as defined in Minnesota statute section 299C.61, subdivision 2.
Is that a motion, Representative Morrison?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
And did you ask for a roll call?
I did not, but I would like a roll call, please.
Roll call being requested. Is there any discussion? Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a clarifying question?
Representative Wasilek.
So this is essentially the LCCMR 2021 bill, which was, from my understanding, this was the same language in the House and the Senate, besides that little tweak that we just made. Is that correct?
Representative Wasilek, that is correct.
Okay.
Unanimously adopted by the LCCMR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Yeah, I just am wondering if we, as I mentioned earlier, don't have a quorum and we can't actually conduct any business without the Senate being here. I just would really like to know what we're doing. Is this theatrics of some kind? Or, I mean, I don't understand what we're trying to accomplish.
Representative Heintzman, throughout the process of this conference committee, we've had absences from the Senate, departing or having only maybe one member show. Our members, and I appreciate your full participation in the conference committee. I think it has been a good effort at getting the information out. As you know, the conference committee will end when the legislative session ends, and we will have to move to a working group. We feel very strongly that it's important that we show our support for these LCCMR recommendations. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is constitutionally dedicated, voted on by the people of Minnesota. It's not supposed to be held up in the budget negotiations. It's supposed to be special. And you and I have participated in this, and it is special. There are unique projects that benefit Minnesotans wherever they live that affect our air and our water and our wildlife. And so we feel it's important to take this vote, to show our support for this. I would ask for your consideration for that. We have our votes in the House, and we have that ability before us now. And I would ask for your support for this. I think it's an important provision. And it would be a shame if we dance up to June 30th on this and it gets tied up with everything else. You know, if this goes to a higher level and it's the leadership of all the caucuses, this is our opportunity to vote on it now and to show our support. That's what we've got. And so I think it's important to get on the record that we support it. And again, I'd ask for your support on this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
You know, I obviously do support the bill. I was a part of making sure that those recommendations were organized and were developed at the LCCMR level. I was a part of those that voted unanimously to support this as it came through committee. I have some really important projects there to my community. And, you know, I want to be a part of a process that's productive. And I've heard you on many occasions talk about how important our work is and our process is here in the House. But in this case, it just feels like it isn't genuine, this part of what we're doing today. And I'm fine with it. I get it. It just seems false. And I'm going to go ahead and vote with the team today because I have voted to support the LCCM and the LCCMR in the past, but I do appreciate the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to put my comments on the record because I don't agree with this process.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman, and you know, I appreciate that you will tell us when you disagree, and I think that strengthens the argument we have. We just may disagree on the process or the procedures, but we know that these are important. And I look at this as this is what we can do now on this bright and brilliant Saturday morning. This is the tool that we have in front of us. And so I appreciate your support for that. I ask Mr. Strohmeyer to take the roll.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Wasowick.
Aye.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, aye.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Rood. Senator Rood. Senator Eichhorn. Senator Eichhorn. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Tomasoni. Senator Westrum. Senator Westrum. There being 5 votes on the House and 0 on the Senate, the motion does not prevail.
The motion does not prevail for lack of 3 votes on the Senate side and the lack of a quorum. Members, I want to thank you for the work that you have done for the people of Minnesota. I want to thank all the agency folks that are online still and their helpful input in helping shape these bills. It is unfortunate that we are moving towards adjournment without progress. I am hopeful, I guess I'm hopeful, realistic but hopeful, that we should be able to come to some agreement so we cannot be facing a government shutdown. I've been through that before. It is not pleasant for any of the employees of the state and the contractors they work with. And we're coming out of COVID and just opening up. And now we have the threat of shutting back down again because of a disagreement over policy. So we stand, I think I can speak for all members that are here on the conference committee, we stand ready to work. After the adjournment of the regular session, there still is a chance that maybe in the next few hours there would be an agreement on targets. Right, Representative Heintzman, there still is a chance. So maybe we'll be called in to work again. But I think it's been a good year in terms of putting together a good bill. And so we stand ready to work. And I will see you this afternoon in regular session. We are adjourned.